Thank you, Primo. Are you good?
Yes.
You sound good. You sound wonderful.
You are my heart.
Om Shri Satche Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Paramatma Ki Jai. Gurudev Bhagwan ki jai, Satchasanga ki jai. Satchasanga ki jai, Satchasanga ki jai. There. Satchasanga ki jai. Whoops. I almost can't stop doing it. Can't stop. Yeah, that's right. That's good language. Okay. So. Here we are. I want to know if Anna from last week, who was speaking about emptiness, is she in the assembly? I didn't look at the assembly this time when Premo was singing. I was occupied by something else. Is Anna here? If Anna's here, will you raise your hand? Well, it's not just for Anna, but I wanted to speak to her because, and for everyone, because she brought up the point of being fearful of emptiness. And I wanted to address that. Here we have Anna Marie, we have Anne Marie, Anna, Anne, and not anyone, three of you are the no. No, let's go to the next one. Next one. No. And Anne Marie. I don't think it's Anne Marie either. No, it's not. Hello, Anne Marie. Okay, so Anna is not there. Anne is not there. But I imagine that, and I imagine because I've heard it, that people fear, they fear a lot about spirituality. They fear emptiness, they fear love, they fear opening their heart. They say they do. I can't imagine why. So I wanted to tell you, and I wanted to tell it straight to Anna. Her name could be Anne. The only reason one would fear emptiness is because one imagines and thinks about it and has not seen emptiness for what emptiness is. And that you must not project ideas into the spirituality. People do this a lot. If I'm really spiritual, I'm not like this. If I'm really spiritual, I'm like this. If I'm really spiritual, I should look and act like this. And actually, you are already spiritual. People who have opened the Dharma gate, which are all of you in the assembly, all of you, have become aware that everything is of the spirit. You need not fear emptiness because you haven't seen it, and some of you may have. I'm just speaking basically to Anna. Maybe some of you haven't and are very concerned about emptiness. You cannot think about it. Either you see it or you don't. What you think about is just filling emptiness with full of ideas. And when you see emptiness for what it is, because you are prepared and you are at the point in your dharma that emptiness is going to display itself, and you're going to, perhaps, well, I would say, and maybe not, but I'll explain that in a moment. You're going to examine emptiness rather than thinking about it. You're going to examine the that nothing can be without emptiness. I mean, everything has its space and its movement and its changes. So that all happens within emptiness. All the changes in emptiness are not two. And you would examine time, the moment, the impermanence of all things, and your consciousness would be prepared to see that without fear. And how it is that you can fear seeing the truth? And not be concerned about upholding an idea that does not promote, or promote is a funny word, does not support, I'm not even fond of that word, does not encourage. Encourage I like because it has the word courage in it. Does not encourage seeing things as they are, rather than seeing things as you want to see them. And then we create fear that, oh my gosh, the way I want to see it may not be right. Somebody's saying that there's emptiness. And she also spoke about, and she presented it very beautifully. She also spoke about not impermanence. What else was it? Well, I'll catch it a little later. I don't really remember. I have this written down. You see, this is all about Anna. Because I thought it was really important that people cease to project fear into what is actual. Now, one of the things that came across consciousness while I was considering this with Anna is your life doesn't change. Realizing the truth, realizing truth, we'll say truth with a small t. These are discoveries, actually. These are discoveries of actuality. It's best to say it like that. Your life isn't going to change. You're not going to drop out of the universe and dissolve into nothingness. And well, maybe you will. If you're lucky, you will. However, it's likely that you won't. You'll still go to the grocery store. You'll still ride in your car. You'll still breathe air. Nothing will, it doesn't take away anything in your life to realize what is actual. As a matter of fact, it that kind of discovery puts one in the light of, I would say again, actuality, and not being fooled necessarily by the way you want things to be, and thinking, oh my God, what is all this emptiness? What is this? I'm fearful of this. For why would anyone be fearful of emptiness? Well, one would be fearful of emptiness because they think they know what's going to happen and what emptiness is. That's why they would be fearful. It was a very good contribution to satsang, what she said. Yes. And Durga and I were speaking the other day, and we were talking about belittling oneself. You've heard me speak about it before, belittling oneself or belittling other. And not just speaking about, sometimes we speak about, we were talking about this in the car the other day too. Sometimes we speak about each other. We just do. We talk about each other a bit. We find out what is the thing that we all need to consider here and what can change. That's the reason, and that's the way that we speak about each other. We don't call each other names, we don't belittle each other. And Durga and I were speaking about the Buddha story, the story about when the man came upon the assembly and started berating the Buddha and t saying terrible things about him. And he just sat there, and his students, his disciples, his bhikshus and bhikshunis became, some of them became angry with him for not sticking up for himself. But what Buddha said is, this doesn't fit me. And this isn't my size. It has nothing to do with me. And Buddha, that's very multidimensional, what he said, because ultimately, none of this has anything to do with you. Not in the fundamental sense of who you actually are, beyond thought, beyond the senses, beyond the body, beyond the names, beyond any experience here that you have. So Durga and I were speaking about, Durga was saying something about maybe a person had thought like this. And I had brought it up. Maybe we actually put it into a hypothetical. I don't remember. What if a person put this onto me? Well, does it fit you? And does realizing that sometimes what people say to you doesn't fit you, does that become an excuse for not acknowledging what may fit you, or may be a good message for you, or may be important for you to hear? So what we came to together was that whatever anybody flails upon you, projects upon you, it's still important to be reflective and not just dismissive. It's still important to consider the matter. And it's also important to, once you have the matter considered, and you see it for what it is, move along. Don't stay there forever and a day. Move on. Because your reflection means your consideration has said to you, whether it fits you or whether it doesn't fit you. And a lot of what people say does not fit, and some of it does. So how do we sort that out? We sort it out through reflecting on what has been said. And if it does fit you, cease to berate yourself and belittle yourself and fall into the trap of self-harm. Get the point and move along. So these are I consider important because they stick around. Anna's point stuck around for a few days. My talk with Durga stuck around for a few days. And I know that people have, they consider these things, fear of truth, fear of opening your heart. For I'm afraid to open my heart because I'm afraid that people will hurt me. Well, open your heart and find out and be willing to be hurt. You're going to be hurt. Life hurts. But it's really rare for a person who is, I will use the word fully in a state of love, to be taken advantage of. Would you like to raise your hands? Durga, was there anything else on that point?
No, I
Okay.
have a little.
I fear emptiness. You don't have to fear anything. Survival takes care of itself. That kind of fear is healthy, what's called survival. But the fear that we make up in our heads may be in our heads. I'm not sure where thoughts actually originate. Are created, and then we experience it, and then we acknowledge it, and then we stay away from the very discovery that will open our eyes and our awareness. So I'm waiting. We have Shrimananda. Shrimananda. I know Shrimananda. I want to say Shrimananda, but I said Shrimananda. So there we go. There you are. Hello.
Yeah. Hello. Hello. Namaste, Shantimai. Nice
Namaste.
to see you. It was so beautiful to hear this morning's subject about silence. And therefore, I want to share something
I
of
didn't
my
say anything about
experiences
silence at all, but go ahead.
about emptiness. Sorry,
Yes,
emptiness.
write it down. That's
Yeah, I wrote it down. I wrote it down.
okay.
The thing is, I was like looking for something in my life, but I didn't know what for. So I searched everywhere, but in the moment I was satisfied or a little bit happy about it, but next time or next day it was away. So it was not the right way. It was not the right thing I was looking for, but I didn't know what. And I was not looking about God or anything or happiness. I didn't know what, just like this. So then I found through a practice, they had a kind of little mini satsang, mini satori, where I got connected with silence. That means I had no thoughts anymore for perhaps, I don't know, seconds, minutes, I don't know. And my breathing became deeper. And then I know, wow, that it is. It was like a seed. And I was so happy. But this come and we're going, and it was like,
Hello.
so for me,
Hello,
yeah.
hello, hello. It's something, you've said something really important. When you see that this breath brings silence, and you see that everything washes off of you, it will go away unless you work with it. So there was a really lovely satori that you had. And these spiritual experiences are to reveal to you what is possible. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and of course I worked with it a lot, and like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when this kind of crisis was, we got isolated. I was in a very deep meditation in my land, the landscape, really paradise. But after, I say, like 2 months, I got really kind of feeling of, perhaps I wouldn't describe it fear, but it was some kind of strong, not feeling so the love for myself. I would say it like this. I didn't feel the love for myself so much. And I had to get out of it. I had to get, I run away from this. And perhaps I later I thought it would be good to have this new chance to go through this kind of emptiness. Therefore, perhaps it was kind of fear. I don't know what it was. It was something I didn't know. It was unknown, and therefore it was scaring because I come so close to this, perhaps that I'm nothingness. I don't know. Yeah, something like that.
What if you are nothingness? Let's look at that. Let's just say so. Because why am I saying so? Because you brought it up.
Yeah.
It's a good point that you brought up. So you fear being nothingness. What if you are? It's fundamentally, what if you are nothingness and you're still living as yourself with this face and this house and this body, with these friends and this work and this world? What if you realize that you are nothingness and it's just playing itself out in life?
I feel it's more joyful, more playful.
I agree. Because
Yeah,
it's filling its in life all the time with every breath. It's just, I wrote to a fellow last night and said, thank you for what comes through you. Life comes through all of us. That's how we live. Life itself comes through us. And then we think we are this or we think we are that. And we adhere to those ideas. What if we are nothingness? And what if the word nothingness cannot really be described?
Yeah, thank you. That's
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, that's all I want to share with you. It's thank you for the putting light on it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Shantimai.
Very welcome. You're very welcome. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Max? Here we are. Am I gone? Your sound is not on.
Sorry, took a while.
That's okay. That's okay.
Namaste,
Namaste. How are you?
Shantimai. I'm really well. Thank
Good.
you. How are
Good.
you?
I'm really good.
Good. Wonderful. So I've been sitting on the Bhagavad Gita for a while now. Like felt like breathing, like just sitting there and, well, trying to grasp at working my way through it. So, and the ninth chapter, it really falls into two parts for me. The first part being, is that already where Krishna talks about death, with the process of
Yes.
bringing up the breath to the third eye?
Yes.
Loved that.
Yes.
Totally love that. Just made me aware of my third eye in a different way that I bring into it meditation now more. It's really exciting. Well, exciting, no, not, but something's.
It can be, it's a great word.
Second part of the Bhagavad Gita was, well, the numbers, the years, the Brahma's day and Brahma's night.
Ah, yugas and the kalpas, yes.
Intimidating, but going beyond that, I think for the first time, a lot of what until then were like spiritual concepts started making sense, like karma, even rebirth, the wheel of life aspect of how it is laid out, that everything dissolves in the end, and then there's an unknown period, and then it starts all over again. And there's a lot going on there. When I started realizing this, I was not enthusiastic. It was more
You're doing the same thing that Anna did.
exactly. And I was aware of that. More and more, and I realized that there is a part in that, but probably fatalism as a path was born.
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on for just a second. Okay, because fatal, I'm looking up in the dictionary. Fatal is deadly, lethal, mortal, causing death, death dealing. You're going to have to die spiritually.
Yes, and I think this fatalism is this, oh no, again. Oh, we have to do it again and again and again.
Yeah, but
Yes.
forget it.
I know.
Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, the disinterested disciple, devotee, I think chapter 8 or 9, the disinterested means whatever happens, happens. What, who am I to fight with any of it? And what is the word you used in the beginning here? You said, it wasn't irritation. Do you, what was it? That this bothered you, right?
Yes,
Somehow.
there is.
The word isn't bother,
I was
but
unenthusiastic about it.
unenthusiastic. There you go.
Yes.
Now, this, I love what's happening here. It's beautiful. These are really rich satsangs. When this kind of point comes to the altar. We shall not say, who am I to be unenthusiastic? Or, but what good does it do you?
None, of course.
Why? Because it is like that. That's why. And you have this sense, I'm dissolving in the universe. I'm so unimportant. I'm so like it's yes and no. And I can't arrive at anything about that because here I am in capital letters. And this drives a person very, very deep and timely. Cosmically timed, very deep into them, their self nature to see I am at best, I am present. And all of this, and ever present, and that which I am is not assailable. Is forever and ever. What did Krishna say? I love the Gita. I love to talk about the Gita. What did Krishna say? He used a certain word about the ultimate un. That there is a second You know, there's the Brahma. We can use any language, any religious language. We don't have to use Hinduism or Buddhism. We're just going to go for that, just using the terms that have been given to us. I'm not a Hindu. I'm not a Christian. I'm not a Buddhist. And I'm not a nada. All of those incredible lights are respected by me. Krishna was speaking about the day of Brahma lasting 311 trillion point oh four cosmic years. 1 year in our life is 1 day of Brahma. See, I get excited. I'm like, yum, 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 yum. This is my dessert. Because why? Because it expands the day. And it makes time almost inconceivable.
Yes.
Okay. And then so Krishna was talking about to Arjuna about that. The kalpas and the mahakalpas and the night of Brahma and the day of Brahma, and these are huge numbers. The Buddhists say it's a one turning of the wheel is a number followed by 27 zeros. One turn. I think it's really good that we look at that. Then Krishna said, and then there's another, and that is the undestroyable. And you heard me say, this is God, which is not destroyed in the night of Brahma over 311.04 trillion years of darkness and disillusion, is never destroyed. This to me is God. This to me is what everything comes out of, what Krishna comes out of, whatever it appears to be. This is the origin, the undying, indestructible, absolute self nature of all things. So why to be uncomfortable with it? Why to project upon it?
I have asked myself that, and I think it's, I heard the other part as well, that Krishna says, oh, you come to me. You can either
Well,
go down that path.
but Krishna is that. Krishna is the undestructible, and so
Yes.
are you.
And so you can either keep going on the path of,
No.
sorry.
You can't do that. And so are you. This is all pointing to your absolute true nature. And I'm going to shift for just a second. I know you've got a sense on your heart. I can see it. I'm going to go back to Max when Max said, I don't know if I'm ready. Well, I don't think you have much say about it. How are you going to hold off the universe awakening inside of you when that's where you're going? You're not in control. Uh-oh. Boing, not in control. So all of these little ideas that I don't know if I'm ready. Well, God knows if you're ready. And at some point, it's going to be a bing. Whoa. Just like Shimananda had this moment of whoa. Silence brings something with it. You, Max, are going to wake up. So you're not going to control that. Be glad about that. Celebrate that. Go out and have a beer because of it. So, Gabriella, Gabriella.
And I heard that or read that too in what Krishna says, that either we go in death into our true nature, go into the unknown, or we stay on the wheel.
But what you haven't realized is it doesn't matter whether you're alive or your time as this particular body with this particular identity has come to an end, because here, this is the world of impermanence. So what if you have another 1,000 lives? If I could have one more life like I have now, and even if I couldn't, and this is the disinterested devotee that he's talking about, one who will move through space without any control whatsoever and just, ex I don't like the word accept, because it has this idea that you have to do something. You have to accept everything. Well, if you accept that you don't accept, and then you accept everything, and you accept that you don't accept, you're done. Good for you. So you can lay that down. The disinterested disciple, the disinterested devotee, the one who, as Krishna says, worship me constantly. Now, is he talking about the guy Krishna, the god Krishna, the warrior Krishna? Or is he speaking about the one that cannot be destroyed in the massive trillions, trillions of light years, is undestroyed even at the dissolution of the universe, so that the creator can open the creator's eyes again and everything flourishes? The disinterested disciple, it just goes with whatever comes and is always in touch with God. Not like, God, I can't forget God. Not like that. But the heart is settled in the matter. And everything eventually, a couple times a day or a couple times a week, reminds you that this is incredible mystery that we are. I am still constantly wondering how this got here as an I named Master Ing Shantimai. What the heck? And I cannot figure it out. So it's another way of being disinterested, and yet enamored by the mystery of God. And I have full faith that the universe knows exactly what it's doing. So to speak, these are words, but they're meaningful, but I don't know that they actually fit as perfectly as I would like them to fit. That the universe knows what it's. I don't know if the universe knows anything. I don't know if it's doing anything. So sometimes words are really slippery. So poetically speaking, whatever this is has full faith in whatever, whatever. Not in control. not flailing out of control. I feel that the word control and not control don't even apply. No ideas can really contain the moment that my mother and father had this union and the spark came, and it was called this person, and it lived through this life and was constantly dying, constantly living, constantly. It was forever. I mean, the moment that that little spark happened, it was also dying. The disinterested devotee. I see it. And Max, just lay down the idea that you're ready or not ready. Well, it's not like, who are you to say? It's not like that. It's like an open realization that I'm going this way and nothing can stop me. Not even my own, not even me.
Well, actually, I had pretty much laid that down already when I talked to you. It was
That's
more
good.
like in looking back that I shared it. And
Well, Max, I'm glad you did, because the beauty of satsang are those who will come forward without considering being embarrassed or what people will think, and lay something on the altar that all of the people in satsang throughout the world are considering. And that's what happens in satsang, and that's the beauty of it. And sometimes people say, oh, I come to say hello because I can't, it's so much for me to say anything in front of all these people. I've had people come to satsang like that. And I think it's also good. Everything that comes into satsang is really beneficial. So you realize, well, there's nothing contributed except the person's shyness that doesn't need to be there, and that's a contribution. So, when I was presented, I don't put this out very often. I'm going to put it out now. When I was presented entered with the Chinupa by a Lakota, and it was rooted in the Chinupa was rooted in an Indian master named Fool's Crow, and then it went into Wallace Black Elk, and then it went into Miguel Rivera, and there I received the Chinupa, the sacred pipe. Miguel Rivera is a marvelous human being, and he knows me very well. And he knows that I feel, and I say it every time I say it, he knows he didn't need to say this to me. And yet he said it to me, and it was very important to hear, even though I would never, ever, 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 and I know this, never, ever, put myself in front of the Chinupa. And this is the same story right here. He said, never put yourself in front of the Chinupa, which means get yourself out of the way and let the process go, and don't take identity as though you're something very special holding this sacred pipe. The pipe is the most important. And I have never forgotten what he said. And I think Miguel knows very well that In my life, I would never put myself before. So this is what I'm saying to you. Cease to put yourself before God and decide whether you're uncomfortable with it or not. That's honest. It's honest. The honesty is rich, but it's something to take a look at. So I will say to you too, both the disinterested, devotee. I love what you bring. Absolutely love what you bring. Absolutely love what Shimananda brought. Absolutely love what Anna brought. Absolutely love it when somebody comes on and says, "Oh, I just come on to say hi because I can't speak in front of 1,000 people or 50 or 100." It's all very important. And you've made a contribution to everyone else's lives who are considering the same thing that you're considering, because these are the doorways of initiation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Thank you, Shantimai.
You're welcome. Thank you for bringing to satsang a very important point. And thank you for not being too shy or thinking, "Oh, if I say this, do I look silly?" You never do. These are very rich points that you bring, all of you. Thank you. Such a mandir. Namaste.
Namaste,
Genevieve.
Namaste,
Namaste, Genevieve.
Shantimai. Namaste. Shantimai, I am considering humility, and what I understood is not to put oneself before God. What you just spoke with Max and Gabrielle seems to me like humility.
Yeah, but why do we have to say it's anything? Sometimes we're humble, sometimes we're not. I don't have to be humble. Whatever humility is within me will come out of its own. I don't have to make it up. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to act like that. Humility is not something that you embody. It embodies you. It's like a breath. Are you thinking what? That you're not humble enough or what? What's that? Somebody said that to me when I'm not humble
I
enough. I said,
thought
okay, whatever. Yeah, you're not humble enough, Shantimai. Well, then go your way. Enjoy whatever. I don't know what to say, but humility is something that is, I think it should never be constructed.
what's structured? Constructive.
Constructed. It's when you fall to your knees in the love of God, the rest of your life is in order.
So it has nothing to do with belittling oneself.
Humility? What is it like one of these flagellating monks? Is that what you're talking about? That's weird.
Not to put oneself down, like being low, something like
What's
that.
that to do with humility? What's putting oneself down have to do with humility? You think
That's
that
my question. I don't really get it, humility. That's why I'm
you
asking.
drop it.
Okay.
Genevieve, you're naturally a humble person, don't you think?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know you very well for many, many years, and I wouldn't just say that. That's very natural for you, humility. And it's very beautiful. Humility is kind, is again, maybe like the silence that Shimananda met and the stripping away of the necessity to approve of what the universe is doing according to Max and Gabrielle. They're just stripping away that idea that I have anything to do with how the functioning of the universe moves through me. And yet, because I am the Dharma and you are the Dharma. And sometimes people get upset and sometimes people are forward and sometimes they're inward. And but I'm not real fond of false humility. I'm not fond of it at all. I would much rather, if you're upset with me, be upset with me than to act upon humility, because humility comes out of the heart. It's something you can't help. You can't help it. It's like love. You can't help it. And sometimes we're not humble. Okay.
So is it also like in the Bhagavad Gita, giving the fruit to Krishna or to God, the fruit of the action?
It belongs to God. That's why you give the fruit of your actions to God, because it already belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. You belong to God. Your breath belongs to God. Your heartbeat belongs to God. Your organs belong to God. The earth belongs to God. The stars belong to God. The waters were created by God. Everything is God. So, what Krishna is doing when he says, offer your works without looking for the result, and the fruits of your actions, dedicate them to me. Krishna is the indestructible one that is no matter what. And that is your nature as well. And he's showing you what your nature is by this action. So what if you took what if you did a work, and as you were doing the work, you were constantly looking for the result? We have to have some kind of idea of what we're doing, no doubt. But what if you were always looking for the result rather than moving through the process? Right. And when it was done, you could say, I don't know what you would say. If I was reflecting on what Krishna was saying, maybe I would say, gee, without these hands, it would not have been possible. Without this breath, it would not have been possible. Without the sunshine, it would not have been possible. Without, So this is kind of handing everything back into itself.
Yeah, understand. Like the story of the stick.
Like the story of the.
Of that stick you somebody gave to you.
That's right. I want the credit. Well, actually, you deserve credit because it's beautiful, but did you give credit to the tree or the seed or the earth or the beginning of time or the sunshine or the water? Did you ever think about how this came onto you, that you're really just contributing back into with your mind because it's already contributed? So he's showing you what's actually happening. You like the Bhagavad Gita?
Oh, yes, I love it.
It's really, 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 really wonderful. I'm going to do a little bit of a review today or tomorrow in a different way. And every year that I go to, well, every time I go to India, I myself, Sahara himself, Anand and Drupada and Mario gather together for an evening. We always do that. And this year, Anatha came, Mario's wife, and Indra came. And we had just one little spurt between Anand and I about the Bhagavad Gita. And I asked him to elaborate, and he elaborated, and I'm going to speak about that with you. So it was really, I love the way Indians look at Indian literature and documents and sutras and spiritual work. That's why I like very much to have an Indian Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, so I'll do that today or tomorrow. So we'll get it out. Before we go on to chapter 10. Chapter 10 we're going on to, or chapter 9 we're going on to. We're going on to chapter 9. Okay.
Oh, thank you so much, Shantimai.
Thank you too. Namaste.
Namaste.
We can close this satsang now. Oh, there's Tim. Hey, your sound is off, Tim.
Yeah. Hi, Shanti Mai. Namaste.
Yeah, how are you?
It was so good to see you in India.
Exactly the same thing. It was so good to see you in India. I was so happy to see you. Go ahead, please.
I was just contemplating on what you were saying before about emptiness, and I got given a book by someone a couple of days ago, and it was actually by that guy David Hawkins that we've spoken about in satsang before, who does the kinesiology testing and all that. And the book's called Letting Go, and I've got all these other books, but I still haven't really read them too much. But I picked up this book, and it really grabbed me actually. And there was one part in there where he talks about how he healed himself of basically a laundry list of different things. And he described how he did that, which was really focusing on what he was feeling about anything. So any of the ailments or diseases, what you would call disease or whatever that he had, he simply felt the feeling as fully as he could, dismissed any labeling of negative feelings, even with the actual feelings that he had, whether it was fear, whether you could call it fear, any of these things, he didn't label it. He simply just felt it as a physical sensation in his body. And so I sort of took that on as a bit of a sadhana, and I've just found it incredibly powerful, rather than actually, because I often will observe my thinking, but to actually feel the feeling and allow that to untie all the thinking that sits beneath it has been quite a revelation. And that feeling is so subtle, like it could be, you know, it could be like a sort of a, I don't know, call it a sulking about something, or, you know, you could label certain things a lot of different ways, but I haven't really been concerned with that at all, other than if I do feel something that feels vaguely resistant, I just feel it. So, and I was just thinking in relation to what you were saying about emptiness, is that the emptiness, you could say there's a thing called feelingness. So if you have a fear of emptiness, it's a feeling, right? You could say that's a feeling. So it's the feeling is not the reality. The feeling is just the feeling, but we repress it and we say it's wrong. We say we shouldn't have it and all these sorts of things, these stupid things, these stories. But what I found was that feeling it completely, there was no need to do actually anything else. And that took me back to, you could say, go back to myself, back to God, whatever you want to call it. So it's been really powerful sadhana, actually, Shantimai.
Yeah, I like it a lot. You have to make room for the emotions, but you cannot stir them. This is really important. To feel it deeply is one thing. to make a story out of it and to elongate it and to push it back into your body because you have ideas about it is very harmful. Yeah. So to feel one is one thing because it has to have space for that. But to stir it around and make new stories out of it just makes new anxiety about it.
Yeah, he put that quite well, actually. He made the simple statement that like attracts like. So if you give those negative feelings and create a lot of story, give them a lot of, you know, a lot of people like to be cathartic and beat pillows and, you know, express their anger. He was saying the exact opposite is don't give your negativity any expression. And you've said it numerous times, is that why do we keep perpetuating the lie? You know, why would we do that? Like, why would we ever do that?
Right.
So it was just, it's been, yeah, it's been, yeah, that's been a very, that's been a good sadhana. I've enjoyed that.
Yeah, there's, as much as I love Osho, and I do, I could never, ever, ever, ever even imagine myself in a dynamic meditation with everyone regurgitating their negativity on each other, jumping around and screaming at the top of their lungs. And people tell me still, oh, it did me a lot of good. Well, I don't believe that, but maybe it did. Okay, there it could. But just making another story out of all of those emotions together. Just
yeah.
Like, oh, help me, help me.
Yeah.
Go sit on the just like a rock, please.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, life presents enough feelings, right? Life, you don't need to go digging. It's like life presents plenty of opportunities to feel stuff. So
yeah.
Not necessary.
Absolutely. How's your family?
They're great. Yeah, they're good. Antonio and I are down south. We're empty nesters now, so all the kids have left home. And, yeah, we're enjoying that, actually. It's actually really good.
Of course. Of course you would. Of course you would. Well, give her my love, please.
I will, Shantimai. And she sends you hers as well. Namaste.
Namaste. I also love the Tim's use the term sadhana for anything that will bring him to clarity and to the deeper sense of himself. In a fully reflective way, sadhana, dharma. So, please, Gayatri, is your sound on? Yeah, it is on. Namaste, namaste.
Namaste. Shantimaya, I thought it was very interesting what Tim had to say, particularly after you had spoken about the disinterested devotee.
That's really a good put together. That's really a good put together. So what do you think?
Well, I was listening to Tim and I understood that there was benefit in letting the feelings express themselves.
Absolutely.
And, yes, and then you spoke about, yes, it's healthy to do that, but you don't stay there.
Yeah, you don't stay there. That's right. You don't mix it up. That's
right. And follow the story and go down the rabbit hole with it.
Yeah, that's right.
So there was that benefit, and but then your statement, the disinterested devotee, it's almost like, you know, it's such a strong state of detachment.
It is. It is.
being the disinterested devotee. And so how do you bridge that, letting your, given that there is a benefit in, and it's healthy to let emotions have their space, you would have to be, well, I don't know that you would, that's why I'm asking you, you would have to have, my view, is an acute awareness.
Well, you do have acute awareness. Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's built in.
Merging those two states, I suppose.
Well, the disinterested disciple, I like how you put it together there. I would say right now, because the views you can have about that are probably a million to center. Right now, I would say the disinterested disciple or devotee, I like the word devotee, that's what Krishna used. The disinterested disciple moves with space and time and God's will without putting themselves forward. That's why I brought the Chinupa story up. I'm not a Chinupa carrier. Look what I have. The Chinupa has me. And you can't identify yourself with the Chinupa. So it is, you can't identify yourself even as a devotee. You're just in love with God. That's the story.
Yeah.
And whatever happens, you can bring what Tim is saying straight to front, because perhaps it's something that you are required to feel. But the disinterested devotee is in love with God, and God leads the disinterested devotee from inside without, as Krishna said to Arjuna, without a carping spirit.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah.
Without a carping spirit, without complaint about, I don't like it, I'm afraid of it. We're just moving with it.
Yeah.
Because that, whatever that is the original spark that created this illusion of life, which I am living due to whatever God is, and as all things are, that is God. So I don't have to push myself forward. I don't have to draw myself back. I am in love with God. That may not be a very beautiful or poetic term, but it's extremely meaningful.
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And your statement.
So you can do anything. You can do just about anything in love with God. I really love what Krishna said in the Gita. A realized soul, they can do anything. Anything. They can be any way they want to be. They don't have to. There's no rules for them anymore.
Yes.
They are the rule. They're living by the love they have for God and whatever happens. I heard the other day, it was really interesting. I remember Rinpoche Trungpa was an alcoholic. And somebody asked, I think Dalai Lama, but I'm not sure. How can you take teachings from an alcoholic? And I think it was Dalai Lama, could be wrong. It was said, if you approach him as an alcoholic, you'll get the teachings of an alcoholic. If you approach him as the Rinpoche, you'll get the teachings of the Buddha. So God is everything and everyone as they are. Do whatever you feel to do that takes the idea that that's not true away. Just drop it. Yeah. And if you need to have feelings, have those feelings. Nothing's in opposition to your realization except for your decision that you're in control. And you're not out of control. It just absolutely does not apply. It doesn't apply. But the idea that you would be in control of what's coming in life to you, through you, and out of you, there is some personal reflection there. But in the bigger picture, which we're always looking at, we're neither out of control or in control. We're in love with God. And that's what's leading us from our heart and soul. Just that and that.
And your statement that life is moving through you.
Yes. Well, stop breathing.
That is also another perception of the same state of being we're talking about.
Absolutely. God is plays all parts, the forgetter, the murderer, the saint, the child, the animals, the sky, the earth. Everything that is permeated by that which is be even beyond its own creation. Isn't that beautiful?
And that statement, I feel it also releases self-identification.
It
When you,
releases, what does it do?
it well, for me, I when I remind myself of your statement that life is moving through you,
Oh,
it
life is
releases.
living you.
Life is living you.
Yes.
It's a very easy way to release self-identification.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And your name is still going to be Gayatri, and you're still going to be married to Jerry, and you're still going to be an Australian, and nothing in your life will change, but your realization will have deepened. And life goes on.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's all another way of looking at Krishna's statement to Arjuna, the disinterested devotee.
Yeah, that's right.
So
I
they're all
fly
similar.
through these years beyond my own desire to do so, beyond my own control to do so, beyond, I don't know anything about how, why. I've looked at it very, very, very closely and cannot come to any conclusion whatsoever. I love that. I'm so happy. Thank you, God. Whatever. It
It's very freeing.
is.
Very freeing, yeah, it is.
And what people realize is that they've always been free. Love is the step inward.
Beautiful thing. Thank you, Shantimai.
You're welcome. Thank you too. Namaste.
Namaste.
I have a little hand up here that says two hands. Oh, Adi, did you get my note about the poster? You're not on. You're not on. You're not on.
Yes, I did. I responded briefly. Yes.
No, nothing more. Nothing more.
Okay. I'm in love with the word imperishable from the
Gita. Thank you, Adi, because that's the word that shows up in the Gita. Thank you very much for that. That's right. Imperishable, indestructible.
Yeah.
The imperishable.
This is
your true nature.
Yeah. And I love how you pointed out today something I was looking at. It's beyond all experience. It's very easy to caught up in an experience, but it's beyond all experience.
It's true. But experience, it's not devoid of experience. Be very careful.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's actually not why I raised my hand. But I had to share that. I wanted to say a little bit more on what Tim was saying about feelings.
Okay.
I think the key is, and I ran this by you once, I first learned it, John Klein. To me, the key when I feel anything or I'm working with people about feeling anything is to feel the sensations, drop any label.
Yeah, though Tim said that.
Yeah, but
drop all labels.
The point I wanted to add was, like when John Klein pointed out, when you label it, you're actually in a memory. You're in the past. You're no longer in the direct experience, so you can't do anything with it. When you drop any label, that's when it dissolves into the openness we are.
Yeah.
You're back to who you are. I just wanted to add, I thought that's a really important point that he made. Why it's so key to drop the label, not just the story, the label, like, so fear, anxiety, you drop that label totally.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Adi.
Being with the sensations, it's very different. You're just with the sensations. And I know he said that, but I just wanted to emphasize that.
Yeah, that's right. One time I remember Tim brought it back. A long time ago, I don't know if these terms are correct. It doesn't feel right, but I let. So these are the two words that I'm not real fond of, but I'm going with them. I let fear take over my soul and my body. And there was like this electricity just going through me, really, really intense, and it just dissolved away.
I had an experience like that. I don't know if I ever told you. Years ago when you first came and I was supposed to cook for you, I was scared blank blank, but I remember you were saying something about let fear have you. So I just let my whole body tremble.
Yeah.
That was feeling sensations. And then it just moved through me.
Yeah. And really without a label, because you can't even think about it. You have really, that's the beautiful part of dropping the idea of this is that, or this is this, or that, or that. Yeah. We're going to be with you real soon, Adi.
So excited.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Thank you, Shantan.
I'm working on another poster.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not talk about it. Okay. Namaste. Thank you, Adi. There's this one hand. It doesn't say who it is. Oh, okay. There we go. Who? Tell me your name again. Why did I know?
Hold on. Can you hear me? My name is Dragana.
Yes. That's right. That's right.
Thank you very much for letting me speak. I want to thank you for the blessing from my foster mom last week, and because of what Adikadi just said, I would like to share something I felt the moment I before I was allowed to enter one last time, just meet her, the body that was not breathing anymore. There was this pure joy in my heart, and I tried to. There was a part of me that wanted to share this pure joy with everybody, so it had to have a name, a label, as and then it kind of moved into a great gratefulness, and that's true too, but it's not that. So I felt it quite difficult to share this
Oh,
immense.
we can say what that is. What Tim's talking about and what Adi's talking about is an intimate experience with that joy that nobody else can have that experience but you. So
Yes.
this is what they're speaking about, feelings that are so intimate that one works with them, or I don't know what the words are. Today I'm having a hard time with words. One is with these feelings, these intimate feelings, by themselves. But this joy that you're talking about, I know about it because when my son passed away, I mean, people were so sad, and I was very sad too, and in waves of sadness and waves of anxiety, of anxious sadness, something that just wanted to come out and be expressed in tears and actually sobbing. But I was very happy that he passed. And I'm still very happy. And I'm full of joy that he did because it was time, you know, and because he couldn't live in the broken body that he had. So why do you think your joy came forward? What was perpetuating your joy about your this passing?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was, yes, it was time for her as well. She was almost 90. And I don't know, there was just one moment when they said, you can go in there, you can do anything, you can sing, you can do whatever you want. And that's when my heart went, wow. I don't know. It's hard to put in words. It was also a hard, not hard. Sorry about the word. People would say sorry, and there is nothing to be sorry for. And that's hard to transport in words. I
Yes, it is.
feel
And
it.
I didn't want to deny anyone their feelings either, because I knew them from my own experience. And yet there was something very, very, extremely beautiful and joyful about his passing that I carry with me all the time. All the time. And yeah, people grieve differently, don't they? What is it, Durga?
Oh, I'm called Donnie. I was in so much gratitude with Donnie for all
Yeah.
that he.
Yeah, that's right. She was just saying that she had a lot of gratitude for Donnie because a lot of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful things occurred in his passing. Wonderful. And yeah, anyhow, topic.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you too. Namaste. So we still have one hand. I don't know why the hands aren't next to the names. Oh, they're gone now. Okay. I would prefer that the if we can re configure this, I would prefer that the names and the hands come together. I don't know if we can or not. Okay, so Premo.
Shiva, Om Namah Shiva.